Greetings, and welcome to Classics for Kids. I'm your host, Carrie Sayer, with the next episode of Peter Pan by J.M. Barrie. We ended last time at a most dreadful spot, with the Lost Boys and Wendy held captive on Hook's ship, the Jolly Roger, and the pirates about to make the boys walk the plank. We'll see what happens next, but first, let's get in the mood with Captain Hook's waltz.
At last I've reached me peak. Peter killed, and all the boys about to walk the plank. Ha ha ha! I'm the greatest villain of all time. Who is Bluebeard?
Nobody!
Who is Nero?
Nobody!
Who is Jack the Ripper?
Nobody!
Who's the swiniest swine in the world?
Captain Hook! Captain Hook!
Who's the dirtiest dog in this wonderful world?
Captain Hook! Captain Hook!
Captain of villainy, murder and loot. Eager to kill any who says that his hook isn't cute.
It's cute!
Who's the slimiest rat in the pack?
Captain Hook! Captain Hook!
Who's unlovable?
You.
Who's unlivable?
You.
Whose existence is quite unforgivable?
You.
Who would stoop to the cheapest and lowest of tricks in the book?
Tricks in the book!
Blimey,
slimy Captain Hook!
All mortals envy me. Yet better perhaps for Hook to have had less ambition. Oh, fame. Fame, thou glittering bauble, in searching for thee, what fame have I not lost? No little children love me. I'm told they play at Peter Pan, and the strongest always chooses to be Peter. They force the baby to be Hook. The baby. That's where the canker gnaws. No! Bicarbonate of soda! No! Who's the swiniest?
Swiniest!
The doggiest?
Doggiest!
The slimiest?
Slimiest!
Who's the creepiest creep in the world?
Captain Hook! Captain Hook!
Who's dispensable?
You.
Reprehensible?
You.
Whose behavior is quite indefensible?
You.
Who's the crawlingest, cruelest, crummiest, crookedest crook?
Crookedest crook! What a price, what a joy!
Mrs. Hook's little baby boy!
The scourge of the sea!
Just lil' old me!
Captain
Hook!
Hook! Hook! Hook!
Hook!
Hook!
Hook!
Hook! Hook! Hook! Hook!
The wretched prisoners were dragged from the hold, all except Wendy, and ranged in line in front of him. For a time, he seemed unconscious of their presence. He lolled at his ease, humming, not unmelodiously, snatches of a rude song, and fingering a pack of cards. Ever and anon, the light from his cigar gave a touch of color to his face. "Now then, bullies," he said briskly, "six of you walk the plank tonight, but I have room for two cabin boys. Which of you is it to be?"
"Don't irritate him unnecessarily," had been Wendy's instructions in the hold, so Tootles stepped forward politely. Tootles hated the idea of signing under such a man, but an instinct told them that it would be prudent to lay the responsibility on an absent person, and though a somewhat silly boy, he knew that mothers alone are always to be the buffer. All children know this about mothers, and despise them for it, but make constant use of it. So Tootles explained prudently, "You see, sir, I don't think my mother would like me to be a pirate. Would your mother like you to be a pirate, Slightly?" He winked at Slightly, who said mournfully, "I don't think so," as if he wished things had been otherwise. "Would your mother like you to be a pirate, Twin?" "I don't think so," said the first twin, as clever as the others. "Nibs, would you?"
"Stow this gab," roared Hook,
and the spokesman were dragged back.
"You boy,"
he said, addressing John.
"You look as if you had a little pluck in you. Didst never you want to be a pirate, my hearty?"
Now John had sometimes experienced this hankering at maths prep, and he was struck by Hook's picking him out.
"I once thought of calling myself Red-Handed Jack," he said diffidently. "And a good name, too. We'll call you that here, Bully, if you join."
"What do you think, Michael?"
"What would you call me if I join?" Michael demanded.
"Blackbeard Joe."
Michael was naturally impressed.
"What do you think, John?"
He wanted John to decide, and John wanted him to decide.
"Shall we be respectful subjects of the king?" John inquired.
Through Hook's teeth came the answer.
"You would have to swear, down with the king."
Perhaps John had not behaved very well so far, but he shone out now.
"Then I refuse," he cried,
banging the barrel in front of Hook.
"And I refuse," cried Michael. "Rule Britannia," squealed Curly.
The infuriated pirates buffeted them in the mouth, and Hook roared out,
"That seals your doom. Bring up their mother. Get the plank ready."
They were only boys, and they went white as they saw Jukes and Checho preparing the fatal plank. But they tried to look brave when Wendy was brought up. No words of mine can tell you how Wendy despised those pirates. To the boys, there was at least some glamour in the pirate calling, but all that she saw was that the ship had not been scrubbed for years. There was not a porthole on the grimy glass of which you might not have written with your finger, "Dirty pig," and she had already written it on several. But as the boys gathered round her, she had no thought, of course, save for them.
"So, my beauty," said Hook, as if he spoke in syrup, "you are to see your children walk the plank."
Fine gentleman though he was, the intensity of his communings had soiled his ruff, and suddenly he knew that she was gazing at it. With a hasty gesture, he tried to hide it, but he was too late.
"Are they to die?" asked Wendy with a look of such frightful contempt that he nearly fainted.
"They are," he snarled. "Silence all," he said gloatingly, "for a mother's last words to her children."
At this moment, Wendy was grand.
"These are my last words, dear boys," she said firmly. "I feel that I have a message to you from your real mothers, and it is this. We hope our sons will die like English gentlemen."
Even the pirates were awed, and Tootles cried out hysterically,
"I'm going to do what my mother hopes. What are you to do, Nibs?"
"What my mother hopes. What are you to do, Twin?"
"What my mother hopes. John, what are..."
But Hook found his voice again.
"Tie her up," he shouted.
It was Smee who tied her to the mast.
"See here, honey," he whispered. "I'll save you if you promise to be my mother."
But not even for Smee would she make such a promise.
"I would almost rather have no children at all," she said disdainfully.
It is sad to know that not a boy was looking at her as Smee tied her to the mast. The eyes of all were on that plank, the last little walk they were about to take. They were no longer able to hope that they would walk it manfully, for the capacity to think had gone from them. They could stare and shiver only. Hook smiled on them with his teeth closed and took a step toward Wendy. His intention was to turn her face so that she should see the boys walking the plank one by one. But he never reached her. He never heard the cry of anguish he hoped to wring from her. He heard something else instead. It was the terrible tick, tick, tick of the crocodile. They all heard it, pirates, boys, Wendy, and immediately every head was blown in one direction, not to the water whence the sound proceeded, but toward Hook. All knew that what was about to happen concerned him alone, and that from being actors, they were suddenly become spectators. Very frightful was it to see the change that came over him. It was as if he had been clipped at every joint. He fell in a little heap. The sound came steadily nearer, and in advance of it came this ghastly thought. The crocodile is about to board the ship. Even the iron claw hung inactive, as if knowing that it was no intrinsic part of what the attacking force wanted. Left so fearfully alone, any other man would have lain with his eyes shut where he fell. But the gigantic brain of Hook was still working, and under its guidance he crawled on his knees along the deck as far from the sound as he could go. The pirates respectfully cleared a passage for him, and it was only when he brought up against the bulwarks that he spoke. "Hide me," he cried coarsely. They gathered round him, all eyes averted from the thing that was coming aboard. They had no thought of fighting it. It was fate. Only when Hook was hidden from them did curiosity loosen the limbs of the boys so that they could rush to the ship's side to see the crocodile climbing it. Then they got the strangest surprise of this night of nights, for it was no crocodile that was coming to their aid. It was Peter. He signed to them not to give vent to any cry of admiration that might rouse suspicion. Then he went on ticking. Chapter 15. Hook or me this time. Odd things happen to all of us on our way through life without our noticing for a time that they have happened. Thus, to take an instance, we suddenly discover that we have been deaf in one ear, for we didn't know how long, but say half an hour. Now such an experience had come that night to Peter. When last we saw him, he was stealing across the island with one finger to his lips and his dagger at the ready. He had seen the crocodile pass by without noticing anything peculiar about it, but by and by he remembered that it had not been ticking. At first he thought this eerie, but soon concluded rightly that the clock had run down. Without giving a thought to what might be the feelings of a fellow creature thus abruptly deprived of its closest companion, Peter at once considered how he could turn the catastrophe to his own use, and he decided to tick, so that wild beasts should believe he was the crocodile and let him pass unmolested. He ticked superbly, but with one unforeseen result. The crocodile was among those who heard the sound, and it followed him, though whether with the purpose of regaining what it had lost, or merely as a friend under the belief that it was again ticking itself, will never be certainly known, for, like slaves to a fixed idea, it was a stupid beast. Peter reached the shore without mishap, and went straight on, his legs encountering the water as if quite unaware that they had entered a new element. Thus many animals pass from land to water, but no other human of whom I know. As he swam, he had but one thought, Hook or me this time. He had ticked so long that he now went on ticking without knowing that he was doing it. Had he known, he would have stopped, for to board the brig by the help of the tick, though an ingenious idea, had not occurred to him. On the contrary, he thought he had scaled her side as noiselessly as a mouse, and he was amazed to see the pirates cowering from him, with Hook in their midst as abject as if he had heard the crocodile. The crocodile! No sooner did Peter remember it than he heard the ticking. At first he thought the sound did come from the crocodile, and he looked behind him swiftly. Then he realized that he was doing it himself, and in a flash he understood the situation. How clever of me, he thought at once, and signed the boys not to burst into applause. It was at this moment that Ed Taint, the quartermaster, emerged from the forecastle, and came along the deck. Now, reader, time what happened by your watch. Peter struck true and deep. John clapped his hands on the ill-fated pirate's mouth to stifle the dying groan. He fell forward. Four boys caught him to prevent the thud. Peter gave the signal, and the carrion was cast overboard. There was a splash, and then silence. How long has it taken? One. Slightly had begun to count. None too soon, Peter, every inch of him on tiptoe, vanished into the cabin, for more than one pirate was screwing up his courage to look round. They could hear each other's distressed breathing now, which showed them that the more terrible sound had passed.
"It's gone, Captain," said Smee, wiping his spectacles. "All still again."
Slowly Hook let his head emerge from his ruff and listened so intently that he could have caught the echo of the tick. There was not a sound, and he drew himself up firmly to his full height.
"Then here's to Johnny Plank," he cried brazenly, hating the boys more than ever because they had seen him unbend. He broke into a villainous ditty. "Yo-ho, yo-ho, the frisky plank, you walks along it so, till it goes down and you goes down to Davy Jones below."
To terrorize the prisoners the more, though with a certain loss of dignity, he danced along an imaginary plank, grimacing at them as he sang. And when he finished, he cried,
"Do you want a touch of the cat before you walk the plank?"
At that, they fell on their knees. "No, no," they cried, so piteously that every pirate smiled.
"Fetch the cat, Jukes," said Hook. "It's in the cabin."
The cabin? Peter was in the cabin. The children gazed at each other.
"Aye, aye," said Jukes blithely, and he strode into the cabin.
They followed him with their eyes. They scarce knew that Hook had resumed his song, his dogs joining in with him.
"Yo-ho, yo-ho, the scratching cat. Its tails are nine, you know, and when they're writ upon your back."
What was the last line will never be known, for of a sudden the song was stayed by a dreadful screech from the cabin. It wailed through the ship and died away. Then was heard a crowing sound, which was well understood by the boys, but to the pirates was almost more eerie than the screech.
"What was that?" cried Hook.
"Two," Slightly said solemnly. The Italian Cecco hesitated for a moment and then swung into the cabin. He tottered out, haggard.
"What's the matter with Bill Jukes, you dog?" hissed Hook, towering over him. "The matter with him is he's dead, stabbed," replied Cecco in a hollow voice.
"Bill Jukes dead!" cried the startled pirates.
"The cabin's as black as a pit," Cecco said, almost gibbering. "But there is something terrible in there, the thing you heard crowing."
The exultation of the boys, the lowering looks of the pirates, both were seen by Hook.
"Cecco," he said in his most steely voice, "go back and fetch me out that doodle-doo."
Cecco, bravest of the brave, cowered before his captain, crying,
"No, no."
But Hook was purring to his claw.
"Did you say that you would go, Cecco?" he said musingly.
Cecco went, first flinging his arms up despairingly. There was no more singing. All listened now, and again came a death screech, and again a crow. No one spoke except Slightly.
"Three," he said.
Hook rallied his dogs with a gesture.
"'S'death and odds fish," he thundered. "Who is to bring me that doodle-doo?"
"Wait till Cecco comes out," growled Starkey, and the others took up the cry.
"I think I heard you volunteer, Starkey," said Hook, purring again.
"No, by thunder," Starkey cried.
"My Hook thinks you did," said Hook, crossing to him.
"I wonder if it would not be advisable, Starkey, to humor the Hook?" "I'll swing before I go in there," replied Starkey doggedly, and again he had the support of the crew.
"Is it mutiny?" asked Hook more pleasantly than ever. "Starkey's ringleader?"
"Captain, mercy!" Starkey whimpered, all of a tremble now.
"Shake hands, Starkey," said Hook, proffering his claw.
Starkey looked round for help, but all deserted him. As he backed, Hook advanced, and now the red spark was in his eye. With a despairing scream, the pirate leapt upon Long Tom and precipitated himself into the sea.
"For," said Slightly.
"And now," asked Hook courteously, "did any other gentleman say mutiny?"
Seizing a lantern and raising his claw with a menacing gesture,
"I'll bring out that doodle-doo myself," he said, and sped into the cabin.
Five. How Slightly longed to say it. He wetted his lips to be ready, but Hook came staggering out without his lantern.
"Something blew out the light," he said a little unsteadily.
"Something?" echoed Mullins. "What of Checho?" demanded Noodler.
"He's dead as Jukes," said Hook shortly.
His reluctance to return to the cabin impressed them all unfavorably, and the mutinous sounds again broke forth. All pirates are superstitious, and Cookson cried,
"They do say the surest sign a ship's accursed is when there's one on board that can be a...
They do say the surest sign a ship's accursed is when there's one on board more than can be accounted for."
"I've heard," muttered Mullins, "he always boards the pirate craft at last. Had he a tail, Captain?"
"They say," said another, looking viciously at Hook, "that when he comes, it's in the likeness of the wickedest man aboard."
"Had he a hook, Captain?" asked Cookson insolently, and one after another took up the cry, "The ship's doomed." At this, the children could not resist raising a cheer. Hook had well nigh forgotten his prisoners, but as he swung round on them now, his face lit up again.
"Lads," he cried to his crew, "here's a notion. Open the cabin door and drive them in. Let them frighten the doodle-doo for their lives. Let them fight the doodle-doo for their lives. If they kill him, we're so much the better. If he kills them, we're none the worse."
For the last time, his dogs admired Hook, and devotedly they did his bidding. The boys, pretending to struggle, were pushed into the cabin, and the door was closed on them.
"Now listen," cried Hook, and all listened.
But not one dared to face the door. Yes, one, Wendy, who all this time had been bound to the mast. It was for neither a scream nor a crow that she was watching. It was for the reappearance of Peter. She had not long to wait. In the cabin, he had found the thing for which he had gone in search, the key that would free the children of their manacles, and now they all stole forth, armed with such weapons as they could find. First, signing to them to hide, Peter cut Wendy's bonds, and then nothing could have been easier than for them all to fly off together. But one thing barred the way, an oath,
"Hook or me this time."
So when he had freed Wendy, he whispered to her to conceal herself with the others, and himself took her place by the mast, her cloak around him, so that he should pass for her. Then he took a great breath and crowed. To the pirates, it was a voice crying that all the boys lay slain in the cabin, and they were panic-stricken. Hook tried to hearten them, but like the dogs he had made them, they showed their fangs, and he knew that if he took his eyes off them now, they would leap at him.
"Lads," he said, ready to cajole or strike as need be, but never quailing for an instant, "I've thought it out. There's a Jonah aboard."
"Aye," they snarled, "the man with a hook."
"No, lads, it's the girl. Never was luck on a pirate ship with a woman aboard. We'll right the ship when she's gone."
Some of them remembered that this had been a saying of Flint's.
"It's worth trying," they said doubtfully. "Fling the girl overboard," cried Hook, and they made a rush at the figure in the cloak.
"There's none can save you now, missy," Mullins hissed jeeringly.
"There's one."
There's one, replied the figure.
"Who's that?"
"Peter Pan, the Avenger," came the terrible answer, and as he spoke, Peter flung off his cloak. Then they all knew who 'twas that had been undoing them in the cabin, and twice Hook essayed to speak, and twice he failed. In that frightful moment, I think his fierce heart broke.
At last he cried, "Cleave him to the brisket," but without conviction. "Down, boys, down, boys, down, boys, and at them." Peter's voice rang out, and in another moment the clash of arms was resounding through the ship. Had the pirates kept together, it is certain that they would have won. But the onset came when they were all unstrung, and they ran hither and thither, striking wildly, each thinking himself the last survivor of the crew. Man to man they were the stronger, but they fought on the defensive only, which enabled the boys to hunt in pairs and choose their quarry. Some of the miscreants leapt into the sea. Others hid in dark recesses, where they were found by Slightly, who did not fight, but ran about with a lantern which he flashed in their faces so that they were half-blinded and fell an easy prey to the reeking swords of the other boys. There was little sound to be heard but the clang of weapons, an occasional screech or splash, and Slightly monotonously counting, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I think all were gone when a group of savage boys surrounded Hook, who seemed to have a charmed life as he kept them at bay in that circle of fire. They had done for his dogs, but this man alone seemed to be a match for them all. Again and again they closed upon him, and again he hewed a clear space. He had lifted up one boy with his hook, and he was using him as a buckler, when another, who had just passed his sword through Mullins, sprang into the fray. "Put up your swords, boys," cried the newcomer. "This man is mine." Thus, suddenly, Hook found himself face to face with Peter. The others drew back and formed a ring around them. For long, the two enemies looked at one another, Hook shuddering slightly, and Peter with the strange smile upon his face. "So, Pan," said Hook at last, "this is all your doing." "Aye, James Hook," came the stern answer. "It is all my doing." "Proud and insolent youth," said Hook, "prepare to meet thy doom." "Dark and sinister man," Peter answered, "have at thee." Without more words, they fell to, and for a space there was no advantage to either blade. Peter was a superb swordsman, and parried with dazzling rapidity. Ever and anon he followed up a feint with a lunge that got past his foe's defense, but his shorter reach stood him in ill stead, and he could not drive the steel home. Hook, scarcely his inferior in brilliancy, but not quite so nimble in wrist play, forced him back by the weight of his onset, hoping suddenly to end all with a favorite thrust, taught him long ago by barbecue at Rio. But to his astonishment, he found this thrust turned aside again and again. Then he sought to close and give the quietus with his iron hook, which all this time had been pawing the air. But Peter doubled under it and, lunging fiercely, pierced him in the ribs. At the sight of his own blood, whose peculiar color, you remember, was offensive to him, the sword fell from Hook's hand, and he was at Peter's mercy. "Now," cried all the boys. But with a magnificent gesture, Peter invited his opponent to pick up his sword. Hook did so instantly, but with a tragic feeling that Peter was showing good form. Hitherto he had thought it was some fiend fighting him, but darker suspicions assailed him now. "Pan, who and what are thou?" he cried huskily.
"I'm youth. I'm joy," Peter answered at a venture. "I'm a little bird that is broken out of the egg."
This, of course, was nonsense, but it was proof to the unhappy Hook that Peter did not know in the least who or what he was, which is the very pinnacle of good form. We're going to have to stop there for tonight. Thank you for listening. Classics for Kids is on KTNA every Tuesday, followed by Encounters.